Well, good evening, good morning. Thank you for joining me this evening. I'm sitting in for George Norrie tonight and tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, we're going to take a look at a couple of different really interesting aspects of the historical Jesus and biblical stories. We're going to talk about the lost Ark of the Covenant. And has it been found? Well, our guest Graham Phillips might have some insights to share with us about that. We'll also talk with David and Jennifer Elkington. What are the Jordan Codices and the mystery of the sealed lead books? We'll talk about that. Have they found one of the first known images of Jesus? And a little bit later on tonight's show, we're going to talk about the Shroud of Turin, which has always been something that fascinates me, and especially that science has investigated it so many times, and they're still kind of baffled by what this cloth is and represents. But joining us for the remainder of this hour is, according to a few listeners, a two-bit historian, Scott Walter. I know the people just don't like when you throw anything in the mix, Scott, that might be a little different than what they've been brought up on. You would address that at the beginning, that you take one stance, and it's not to belittle or dissuade people from their belief systems, but it's to take a look at, I have to look at the physical evidence of what exists. And what I think is fascinating is you're talking about backing up and giving historical significance to a find that backs up stories that are in the Bible, and that this family did exist, and this great teacher and his family were a part of history. It just, you don't necessarily have to talk about the supernatural aspect for this story to occur. And again, it's a probability that this is the biblical Jesus. There is still the possibility that this is just a family that happened to have the same names that matched. And we said it was so fascinating because the names that are in here match so concisely and precisely with the biblical Jesus and the history we know. All the way down, you think the Ringo, as we mentioned, for those of you that didn't turn in, we said if you walked into a crypt and found a gravestone that said John, one that said George, and one that said Paul, you could say, this is kind of intriguing. And then if you found a fourth one that said Ringo, it's pretty hard to now dismiss that what you've just stumbled into. And you say the Ringo of this is the Mary Magdalene, the Mara crypt. All of the etchings that appeared on these ossuaries, these bone boxes, did they have, was testing done on them to make sure that it was the same engraving, done the same way, and done at the same time? Or is that really not something that can be done, proof of that?
You know, I really haven't looked into that aspect or read much about that.
Because I thought that was part of the issue with the brother of Jesus' ossuary, was that, like I said, they thought the name Jesus was...
Might have been added
yeah. later, and that the engraving didn't seem to necessarily match the rest of the engraving on the ossuaries.
Well, I think what the final conclusion was is basically that's what a lot of people wanted to believe, and it would be a way for them to dismiss that ossuary as not being what it is.
But the other point is to take into consideration, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, is you said this one had the longest inscription.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very time consuming to do an inscription. So it could possibly theoretically also be that maybe the apprentice helped chip in some of the letters. So things might appear a little bit different as a signature would appear between different people.
Well, that's true.
They didn't have laser engraving so much.
Well, to my knowledge, they were using lasers back then. But, you also have to remember that these people died at different times, we assume. So it's probably not likely that the same person carved the names on all the ossuaries, and there are differences. In fact, if you look at the inscription on the Jesus ossuary, read right to left, it looks like chicken scratch. But what I've been told from the experts is that, no, that's very good, readable first century Aramaic. So,
and that brings us to a quick question that came in, and I talked to you about it off air and you addressed it quickly. I want to make sure we do this. Roger wrote in during the break, and he said, Scott referred to the fact that the name is not actually J-E-S-U-S, Jesus. It's Yeshua.
Right.
Then why is the name Jesus inscribed on these ossuaries?
Well, the name Jesus isn't inscribed on the ossuaries.
What?
It's Yeshua.
Oh, okay.
And my understanding is that was supposedly what his real name was. Jesus is a later invention, I guess you could say, or interpretation.
Interpretation, right,
yeah.
of the name.
Right.
All right, we need to take a quick break. We've got much more to explore with our guest Scott Walter here on Coast to Coast AM. We're back as we discuss the possibilities, probabilities of the history and mystery surrounding Jesus. And we're talking with Scott Walter from America Unearthed and so many other projects. And you've got a lot more bubbling right now. So there's some exciting stuff going on.
We do.
And again, you know, as you hear in some of the messages from George Norrie on the show, we're not here to beat up our guests. We're here to listen to stories and open to different possibilities of history or interpretations of these histories. And I think a lot of people forget that even church leaders, including our current Pope, have backpedaled a little bit on what has been told.
A little?
And taught. Well, I'm trying to be polite. I'm not Catholic, so I don't want people saying, you don't know nothing, Lutheran boy. But I just mean that even staunch Catholics have settled on the fact that some of this is myth. Some of this is legend told by people that had a stake in the game at the time, and King James, and people that wanted a story to be told their way, and non-canonical books, which were part of the canon, have been removed to tell an easier narrative, to keep you on path instead of taking you down routes that they don't want to have to try to explain in church. You can believe that or you don't have to. And that's the beauty of shows like this. It's opening the probability and possibilities of what could exist. And Scott is somebody who's boots on the ground. He's not sitting at home, surfing the internet and, you know, in between bites of Cheetos and porn sites, looking into these stories. He's boots on the ground, going out and looking at these historical sites, looking for the understanding of what's going on. That's why I invited you to come back. You fascinate me. I love what you do, and I love that you're open and fun about what you do. It's not this stodgy professor rant that we get to hear in here. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show for what it is, folks, an entertainment. And maybe you might learn something by accident if you listen a little bit. Mm-hmm. Instead of coming in with prejudgment and thinking you know it all, that's what frightens me most is everyone that believes with certainty that they know the one answer because of who told them. That's not always necessarily true.
Well, you know, it's okay for anyone to believe whatever they want. I mean, that's called free will, free thought. And that was one of the reasons our country was founded, so that people could do that. And that's perfectly fine. And if people think that I'm full of crap and BS and they don't like it, that's their prerogative. And I'm okay with that.
Right. And that's, but that's part of what goes on and how, you know, the idea is, remember, a lot of science and what we know starts with theories and hypotheses. Right. And then seeing if the historical relevance of what we're theorizing or hypothesizing adds up to what we're finding. And if it does not, we throw it away. And if it does, we keep it and learn from those moments.
Right. Well, look, here's the bottom line. Okay. This tomb exists. It had 10 ossuaries.
Right.
There were seven names. These are the names. Fact. It was buried in 2 feet of Terra Rosa, fact.
Do you think that the other three ossuaries that had no names were those related to the skulls that were found in there?
I'm certain they were. They were other family members for whatever reason. Maybe the scribe.
I mean, are those the three? The three skulls that you said were found in the ossuary that were put in.
I don't believe that, okay. And the evidence is not consistent with that.
Right.
The three skulls were in relatively good condition. The bones in all of the ossuaries were pretty degraded. So they come from a different time. I wish we would have been able to do some C-14 dating to absolutely confirm that. But I think just that anecdotal evidence is enough to say that one came from a different time, 1,000 years later.
Right. You'd mentioned earlier, you said that some of the bones had been disturbed in two of the ossuaries. Does that mean that bones were left behind? Because yeah. I would think if you really found, you think you found Jesus's bones and Mary Magdalene's bones, you'd take them all.
Well,
or again, is that it's theft by, opportunity, and what somebody turned away, it's real easy to grab a foot bone or, you know, a finger than it is to grab everything that's in the ossuary.
Well, I think the suggestion is that the bones were missing in those two ossuaries happened at the time that whoever went into the tomb. It happened then, not when they discovered it in 1980. This happened 900 years ago.
Sure. Do we know through oral history, maybe the Knights Templar or even the Masons, where these pieces?
In the interest of full disclosure.
Or do I not want to ask this question because I've got to drive home and I don't want to.
No. I'm a Freemason.
Okay.
And I have heard some things.
I know
so,
things.
So I look, part of what I do is I try to find the truth. I try to get to the bottom and sure. get the answers to whatever questions are put in front of me. I mean, this is what I do for a living in the concrete world. And look, the process of investigation is the same, whether I'm looking at a piece of concrete or I'm looking at a first century tomb with 10 ossuaries. I mean, you compile facts and then you try to see what the story is that those facts tell. It's no different. And, you know, people have accused me, well, you're not an archaeologist and, you know, you're a concrete guy and you're a geologist and you can't do archaeology. Really? Why can't I?
Isn't archaeology just the study of these artifacts?
Well, I checked, archaeologists dig in the ground. They look at stone artifacts like arrowheads and,
right.
you know, hammers, stones, and all that. And that's a world that I'm very comfortable in. So I'm not saying I'm an archaeologist, but there are aspects of archaeology that I would think they could use my help in.
Sure.
So,
and that's the important part. That's what's so funny to me, you know, doing what we do, with paranormal radio and paranormal research for a lot of the part on Darkness Radio and even in what I bring to coast, it's funny how there's this line of derision between nobody wants to work together. Everybody wants to keep the little keys to their kingdom, you know, their imaginary kingdom. And instead of opening it up to make it something that we can all learn from, it's no, my way is the only way. This is the right way. And, right. and this is yeah. how it's going to be. Whereas if they brought somebody in with your expertise and background, it might make more sense and get them to their answer faster, or perhaps dissuade what answer they believe they've got and save them a lot of time and research money and grants and get to what they really need to look at.
Well, you know, you bring up a really, really good point. And
I knew I'd get to one.
No, but here's the bottom line. You know, when I was doing American Earth and I'm doing these shows, I'm the face of this research and people think that I'm the guy and I did all this stuff. And that's not true. I certainly did my share, but I have my wife, Janet. I've got people like Alan Butler, Bill Mann, Steve St. Clair, and many other people that I collaborate with. People who are more interested in getting to the truth than getting credit. Right. And, you know, I mean, it's that same old thing. I mean, the more you give credit to other people, the more it comes back to you.
Sure.
But in my world, I've only got so many years to live. I'm not getting any younger. And so by working with other people and sharing my research and them sharing their research with me, we get 10 miles down the road. Whereas if I was territorial, like an awful lot of people that I run into,
right?
You know, they get stuck in their own little world and they become protective of this. And this is when the dogma starts, and you just have to relax and share the information. And that's what I try to do. And I'm very open. I'm very honest about it. Sometimes to a fault, I take a lot of criticism, and I make mistakes like everybody else. But you know something? Every once in a while, I'll trip over something and I actually get some things right. So, but it's important to work together with like-minded people, and that's not always easy to find. And no. I've been really, really fortunate.
Especially in this speculative world of trying to understand and translate what it is that we're finding and what it meant
right.
and what it means now.
It's difficult.
Sure.
It's hard. And even though I like to think I have all the answers, I don't. And sometimes just one little suggestion from somebody that I just never dreamed would spark something, all of a sudden, boom, we make a big discovery, and that launches us on to the next thing.
Which is what's exciting about this work, right? Because you went to look at one thing and hear this theory and idea behind what is, you know, captivating a lot of the world.
It's a hoax.
Right. Is this a hoax? Is it real? Is it what? And then something, a new spotlight is shown for you. And what did you find with the ossuary and with this history that opened up connection to the research you have been doing?
A big discovery happened a couple of years ago, again, through collaboration. And I was talking about some of the people that are on the Telpiat Tomb team of researchers who are very famous people, very nice people. I've met them, and one of them, who I had not met, his name was Charles Pellegrino, who went down to the Titanic with James Cameron. he reached out to me through a mutual friend, Jerry Lutkin, who lives here in the cities, and did all the calculation on the odds of that not being the biblical family. And he said, hey, Scott, this fellow Charlie wants to meet with you electronically and share some images.
Sure.
On the lid of the Jesus ossuary that had never been published.
The Jesus ossuary or his brother James?
No, on the Yeshua, okay, right. Son of Joseph ossuary.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you want me to tell you what happened, or do you
no,
want to save it?
No, let's. Yeah, of course. Tell us. We've got about got about 4 or 5 minutes here in this segment.
So. Okay. Well, anyway, just to step back for a sec, we're talking about how I got started on this was the Kensington Runestone, and after collaborating for a long time with some good scholars that decided to go in a different direction after a few years. That's another interesting story, but we pretty much found everything. Mm-hmm. On the runestone, as I predicted we would after I did my geological work, which convinced me that the inscription was old. I said, well, if it's old, then all the stuff that the scholars said didn't exist has to exist. It must exist if it's real. And we found it. Of course, all that did was piss them off even more, but that's another
story.
So
you're saying
too.
The inscriptions, the way the lettering was, everything.
The symbols.
Right. If you could prove that these did exist at some point in history, then it would back up your hypothesis on what it was you found.
Well, actually, I don't look at it that way.
Okay.
Look, rocks don't care. People care, right?
Honey badgers don't care either.
I trust the rocks.
Right.
And so there was all this noise. It's all people stuff. The rock told me it was real, therefore this stuff had to exist. The only thing that we did not find was this symbol being used for the letter A, the hooked X. That was the last thing. And through an interesting process of going through Masonic research, and which led me to the Templars, I came to understand what I thought that symbol was, an ancient Hebrew equivalent of Aleph, the first letter in the Hebrew alphabet. When Charlie contacted me, and he sent me the photographs of this symbol carved on the lid of the Jesus ossuary, just to keep it simple.
Right.
I couldn't believe it, because they thought, meaning the researchers, thought that it was a single symbol, a star symbol. And I said, guys, that's not a single symbol. It's a monogram of two symbols. It's a very beautiful, a perfect hooked X and a tau cross. The Hebrew Aleph, as I was telling you, the hooked X, I believe is, and it's being used for the letter A, is a straight line version, a stonemason carver's version of the Hebrew Aleph. The tau is the last letter in the Hebrew alphabet, Alpha, Omega, beginning and end.
Wow.
And they accepted it. They said, you know what? You're right. That is two symbols. And wow. So, If it was the Templars that went into the tomb,
mm-hmm.
and they did take bones from the ossuaries, those two ossuaries, don't you have to take the lid off?
Sure.
You see where I'm going?
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
Wow. You find something like this, and doing the work you do, I mean, how exciting is it for the last piece of the Rubik's Cube to pop into place for you like this?
Well, I haven't published my new book yet, and this is one of the big reveals.
Sure.
In the new book. I just gave it away, but it's still, there's amazing stuff in here. It was an epiphany moment. It really was. And I've had a few of them as I've gone along where something happens. I told you what happened at the tower, where all of a sudden you just know you're on the right track. And this was the last piece of the symbols on the runestone, and to have somebody else who reached out to me, who heard what I was doing, and I, because I shared my information, this is what I got back, and it was the greatest gift, probably the single greatest gift I'll probably ever receive, is that hooked X on the Yeshua ossuary.
Isn't it funny to start off as a concrete guy who then finds the Kensington runestone image and be able to break that code down, and then that takes you to the Jesus Yeshua ossuary for a biblical without doubt, the most famous historical figure in history.
If somebody said to me, Scott, you can find the hooked X anywhere you want, you pick it, we're going to put it there, I never would have picked this.
No.
This is greater than anything I could have imagined.
That's awesome.
What can I say?
And it measures up to the story. So we're going to take, we'll take a break. We'll take your calls if you have questions, polite questions for our guest, challenge questions. That's fine. Scott Walter is here with me for the remainder of this half an hour. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Well, that's me, and I'm looking forward to talking with you this evening. We're going to open up the phone lines here. You can call in and question Scott yourself regarding the fines and any questions you may have regarding the show and all of that. But I want to make a quick mention. If you like what you hear on Coast to Coast AM, you're going to love what you see. Did you know George Norrie not only hosts one of the most popular radio shows in the world, but he's also the host of Beyond Belief? It's a TV series. You can go see what you hear here on Coast to Coast AM by checking out beyondbelief.com. And with the holidays right around the corner, you're looking for that special gift to give to someone. Somebody that you know likes to listen and cuddle up next to you while you're listening to Coast AM. Well, then we have the perfect gift for you. George Norrie has authored the book, Night Talk, the book. It's available on Amazon.com right now. It's a perfect stocking stuffer to give to those that you love and like. Make sure that you pick up a copy of George's book, Night Talk. It's available on Amazon.com. Scott Walter, under the microscope, when we return with your calls here on Coast to Coast AM. Cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war. Scott Walter, are you ready for phone calls?
I think so. Bring it. Let's do it.
We'll cuddle afterwards if it gets rough.
Okay.
And remember, when you call in, let's have some respect. I know that there are very intelligent listeners to Coast. We'd love to hear your points, your thoughts, your questions for Scott Walter. So let's go straight to wild card line one, Gordon in Lakeland, Florida. Welcome to Coast AM.
Thank you for taking my call, Dave, Scott. I believe that you said that these had to line up with the Bible, and of course I don't mean any disrespect, but the body of Jesus was like resurrected and wasn't in the tomb. And then when he came back down, he then resurrected the second time and floated into the air. And the point that I'm making is the Bible has historically been shown, and the science in the Bible has been shown, the prophecies in the Bible have been shown to be very accurate. And now there was a few typographical errors where 40 and 4 got switched around, and I caught that error, as did a few other researchers, okay? But it's very, very accurate. And so how could there be a body of Jesus, or was one of the bodies switched around or something? What's your take on it?
Well, we kind of covered that at the beginning of the show, too, when I asked Scott that exact same question. And what we're looking more at is not the supernatural aspect of the story. Now, you also made an interesting point, Gordon, of saying that this has been scientifically proven. You show me a paper that scientifically says that there's proof of resurrection and ascension into heaven without any of that. That doesn't exist. That's still part of the canon and the story of Christ.
Can I take a shot at answering that?
Yeah, I'd love to hear
it. Well, okay, assuming that there is a God, which we all believe, there's no way the universe could have come into existence by itself. Okay, we all accept that. We don't know a lot about God, but if God could make the universe, then doing something like tinkering with or fine-tuning and adjusting is possible. So you're telling the mechanic that created the thing, you're telling the creator of the Ford or the Chevy or whatever that he can't mechanic it. So I can't prove resurrection, but inductively it seems possible. And I apologize that I didn't catch it on the top of the program, but it's
no problem.
A question, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is. But again, and I don't know, Scott, if you want to retackle that of, and thank you for calling in, Gordon. We appreciate the respect and the nice question. What do you make of,
well,
according to the historical supernatural aspect of the story and the body vanishing and reappearing?
Well, there are many people that believe that the whole story of the resurrection is an allegory, and that allegory.
You say there are a lot of people. Do you also mean in the church that you've spoken to, or are you talking in the scientific community? Because I think that's where the derision line comes for a lot of people. Is they're like, oh, it's just these scientists that are saying this.
Well, I think that I think that this whole idea that this is an allegorical story goes back to the time of Jesus and beyond. And in fact, what a lot of people believe is that this is an allegory for actually the resurrection of not the Son of God, but the Son God. In other words, the 3 days that the sun stands still on the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year, the 20th, 21st, and 22nd, represent those 2 days, and that the Son God is then resurrected, the days get longer, and we have the march to spring. And you have to remember, if you go back in history, thousands of years, people didn't understand. As the days got shorter and the sun, dipped farther and farther south on the horizon. They didn't know if the sun was going to come back or not, and that the this is how these rituals began, that you know, were these festivals to bring the sun back. And so this is where this allegory is believed by many to have come from. So the whole idea that Jesus was resurrected, to many people, they believe it's just an allegorical story of the sun.
And please pay attention to what he just said. This is a belief. He didn't say this is the answer. He's just giving you a possibility for where that story came from. And this is not trademarked and copywritten by Scott Walter.
No.
He's just conveying part of the history of the idea of where this story originated. Let's go wild card line to Barrett in Houston, Texas. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. I have two brief comments, and then I'd like to ask Mr. Walter a question.
Go for it.
First, how many Latinos are named Jesus for Yeshua or Jesus? How many girls are named Maria or Mary? And if you had a band, a rock band, and the four guys, and the first three guys are named John, Paul, and George, the fourth guy is going to nickname himself Ringo. And if you throw a rock into a crowd of Muslims, the guy that says ouch is named Muhammad. So there's only one thing, the Bible teaches us, there's only one thing we can do to please God, no matter how much charity or good intentions or anything, there's only one thing we can do that pleases him, and that's faith. So you're offering us an opportunity for more faith. I thank you for that. But I have a question for you about the Freemason Masonic.
Yep.
Is Donald Trump a Freemason Masonic?
Well, the answer to that question is I don't know. However, in my personal opinion, the conduct that he exhibits is not very Masonic-like. If I acted the way that Donald Trump does in some cases, there would be brothers whispering in my ear.
All right, let's go to wild card line four. John in Pennsylvania, welcome to Coast AM.
Thank you. I would just like to touch off on the first caller, and then I have a question.
Okay.
As he was talking about, like, scientific proof, as far as that goes, to have, let's just say, for example, that Jesus was resurrected, right? There would be no scientific proof of that. But what we do have is history. We have two guards who were posted outside the tomb who were executed because the, quote-unquote, you know, dead man escaped. And we also have a poet who wrote about Christ. He also said that, you know, this man, or if you could even call him a man, because of the things and miracles he has, you know, he had performed, you know, how can you get scientific proof out of that? You can't, but you do have history of accounts for people outside of the biblical chain who did see Jesus's tomb emptied. And my question is, you are a Freemason. Do you align yourself with the teachings of Albert Pike?
Well, some of the things that Brother Pike wrote, I think, are very prophetic, and I thought he did a wonderful job in some cases. I don't support some of the beliefs of the of his support of slavery and some of the other things that he was known to believe. But I think he was a good man for the most part. But you have to understand, he was living in a different time and a different age than we live in now, that a lot of the things that he embraced were accepted in the culture of the time and the environment that he lived in that today we would frown upon. So was he a perfect guy? By no means. But did he do a lot of good work? Did he write a lot of good material that I believe as a Mason are words to live by? Yes, I do. I think he did some wonderful things. But was he perfect? No.
Thank you, John. Let me ask you, Scott, doing what you do and all the research and digging to get to the answers or the perceived truth, does that ever fly in the face of your work with the Masons and your brotherhood? Do they ever say, you know, Scott, maybe you should leave this alone?
The answer to that is no, never. In fact, I have asked many times, hey, am I getting, you know, off base here? Am I going into a direction I should back off? And the answer is no, absolutely. You're doing a great job. Keep it up. And although
now, isn't one of the belief systems as a Mason, you have to have a God. You have to have faith in something. By what a lot of listeners, I think, are hearing tonight is that you're actually, which you're not, you're just trying to prepare the scientific fact of what was found and what the probabilities and possibilities of that finding means. But doesn't that shake the idea and confidence that then Jesus was Son of God? Doesn't that start to shake the principle of what the Masons are doing?
Not at all. Okay. No. In fact, the only thing that a Freemason is required to do is to make a statement in a belief in a higher power. Whatever that higher power is for you, that is up to you. I mean, on the altar inside a Masonic lodge, you will see a Bible, you'll see a Torah, you'll see a Quran. You might see a Book of Mormon. I personally took my oath on a Thomas Jefferson Bible. I've seen eagle feathers for Native American brothers who are taking their oath to the Creator. And at the end of the day, and one of your callers said essentially the same thing, whatever deity that you embrace, doesn't matter what religion you are, what faith you are, it's the same deity. We're all talking about the same thing. So that is really all that is required. And
so it's required to stand for something.
Well, to believe in a higher power, that you are not the end all. And you know, some people, I think, believe that they're above everything else, when in fact, there are a lot of things that happen in this life that we can't control, that we can't explain, yet they happen. And that was difficult for me. And even though I like to think I have all the answers, I don't. And so that's the only thing we have to do. After that, you just conduct yourself and treat people the way that you want to be treated. Treat people with respect. Allow them to think freely. I mean, that's what this country was founded on. The people that are responding to our interview tonight, they're certainly welcome to agree or disagree. But I think the one thing that we can all agree on is that it should be done respectfully.
Right. Now,
that's it.
I have a question for you, and I don't want to take you too far down the conspiratorial tunnel of,
go ahead,
of the Freemasons.
Bring it, baby.
Because I know a lot of they get a lot of bad rap and a lot of great rap. But
yeah.
What I'm curious about is when you make a finding like this, when you suddenly see the aha and the hooked X,
right?
Do you announce this, or do you go to your brothers first and say, "Can I announce this?"
I can do whatever I want.
Okay.
I will. As I said before, and I think it's the responsible thing to do. Anytime you think you have a new discovery, especially something that's important, you got to run it by some other people. Mm-hmm. Some people would call that peer review. And in my business, any report that I send out with an opinion in it needs to be reviewed by one of my colleagues. So I do the same thing. If it's Masonic related, I'm going to go to a group of brothers that I think are going to have a knowledge base to be able to give me good feedback on that. And I maybe I'll talk to Janet. Maybe I'll call Bill Mann or some of my other colleagues that I do this research on. I might run it by all of them. It depends on what it is. But I want to look to see if I'm not off base, and maybe they'll say, well, that's good, Scott, but you might want to think about this. I just think that that's being responsible.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Carol in North Carolina, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Thank you, Dave and Scott, for this program. My question, Scott, is this tomb you're talking about with the 10 ossuaries in it, is it in close proximity to or far away from the tomb of Joseph of Arimathea, and is that relevant or not?
Actually, that's a really good question. There is a second tomb. The tomb of the biblical family of Jesus is called the Garden Tomb. There's another one about 100 feet away called the Patio Tomb. And it has not been entered. The ossuaries are still there. And they have put down a camera into this tomb. And they have seen inscriptions. They've seen carvings on these ossuaries. And they have good reason to believe that it could be the tomb of Joseph of Arimathea. So, yeah, we don't know that for sure. I don't know if they're ever going to go back in there and do any further research, but there is a lot of people in the scientific world in Israel that believe that's what that could be.
What would be, and thank you for calling in, Carol, what would be the hesitation? We have no problem going into every crypt in Egypt and digging around in the
Native American
burial grounds and everything like that. Why do we open up I understand the Christ family was, or the Jesus family was a mistake.
Yeah.
but now that we think we found this other one, why would we not open it and explore it? Because I would think the church would want validation.
Well, in this case, the Orthodox Jewish community is, they won't allow anyone to go in there because they consider it to be sacrilegious to go in there and go into a burial tomb. And I quite frankly, I can't really make a strong argument other than if you want to understand history better, I think that there is a protocol that could be followed that is respectful, but yet done scientifically to try to answer some of these questions. That's not my call. That's my opinion. And they certainly aren't going to listen to me, so we'll see what happens.
Let's try another quick call here west of the Rockies. Arnie in California, do you have a quick question for Mr. Walter?
Yeah, I have a couple of quick comments and questions. First is, there's been in the past very prominent historical forgeries that didn't come out. The researchers, everybody that has expertise, said they were authentic. One was the Hitler diaries. They were published. In fact, I got a newspaper that was publishing them in chapters. And then a year or so after, it was turned out to be a fraud. So these things can be fraudulent. There's a lot of emotion in it. I would be concerned. The other point I'd like to make is that in Israel at the time, it was in chaos. Total chaos. I mean, it was in 70 A.D., the Romans destroyed it, attacked it. So and before that, there was revolutions. And to think that a nuclear family could die in almost like in a casual, peaceful setting, all be buried together, I'd be suspicious of that. Just on a historical basis, James survived Jesus, and so did some of his disciples. The actual books of the Bible were written quite a bit after, but in some of the letters were written by the followers of Jesus that were still alive, even in that tumultuous period. So I would be very, very suspect that somebody could come up on a grave and have all these together because the early Christians, as it was written, were traveling around. And I would like the researcher to comment. This is a very interesting topic, and I've looked at it. And the other theory was in
James. Well, Arnie, let us answer that one. We're out of time, so thank you for calling in. How would you like to answer? I was always under the assumption that they actually stayed in tight-knit communities and with family at that point.
Well, I'm not an expert in that area. All I can tell you is these there's nobody that's questioned the work of the archaeologists, and I think we have to take it at face value. I mean, you can speculate on the circumstances in the first century that were going on that some people might want to think, don't support what was found. But the fact is, 10 ossuaries were found. These are the names. This is the interpretation. What can I tell you? I mean, the facts are the facts, and the rest of this is speculation, and you can speculate forever. The one that the Miriam Neymar was the one carved in Greek. Maybe she was brought in centuries later to the tomb. She was returned later. I mean, we don't know. All we know is we have these 10 ossuaries. These are the names. This is the evidence, and I think the interpretation is pretty straightforward.
Scott, we've got about 30, 40 seconds left. What can people do to keep up with you? What's going on next in your world?
Well, we are currently looking to possibly do another show with some brand new research we haven't touched on at all, but does dovetail with what we've talked about. People can come on my blog if you want to talk to me or ask questions. Go to scottwalteranswers.blogspot.com. You can go to my website. You can pick up my books if you want. HookedX.com, HookedX.com, or hit me with an email, text me, whatever. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
You can check out Coast to Coast AM for links to our guests. Special thanks to Scott Walter for joining us in the first 2 hours. When we return, we're going to unearth the history and mystery behind the Shroud of Turin next on Coast to Coast AM.